Note to listeners, this episode contains adult content and language. Yeah. It's October 24th, 1993. Fans crowd the stage at Madison Square Garden. They're about to witness one of the most legendary hip-hop performances of all time.
Where's Tupac and Biggie Smalls?
Tupac Shakur and Biggie Smalls take the stage together. They're good friends, but far from equals. Tupac is not yet signed to Death Row, but he has already sold millions of records and starred in two feature films. Hollywood is calling him the next James Dean. Biggie is still waiting to release his first album. Tupac is happy to lend Biggie his stardom. They met for the first time earlier this year and quickly became friends. There isn't any East Coast, West Coast hatred between them. When Biggie comes to California, he sleeps on Tupac's couch. And when Tupac goes to New York, he rolls into Biggie's neighborhood in a limousine and invites Biggie to be the opening act at his concerts. Now, in Madison Square Garden, the friends have a chance to share the stage. Biggie may be a newcomer, but he knows how to hype up the hometown crowd at the Garden. He takes the mic and starts to freestyle, rapping off the top of his head. On stage, Tupac feeds off his friend's verse, then launches in on his own.
Born in the ghetto as a hustler, older, a straight soldier, walking at the busters, no matter how you talk, niggas never die. We just retaliate with hate, then we multiply.
The crowd loves this pair. Tupac and Biggie have plans to team up again soon. But the friends are pulled in different directions. Biggie hopes to escape the violent world he raps about. Tupac is drawn to the violence. A year from now, in New York City, that violent world will come for Tupac. And when it does, it will rip his friendship with Biggie apart.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you-know-business.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. In our last episode, we saw Death Row conquer the industry thanks to a platinum 1-2 punch from Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg. And Sean Puffy Combs closed a major deal to give Bad Boy a new home with Arista Records, clearing the way for Biggie Smalls to complete his debut album, Ready to Die. Now, Biggie Smalls takes Bad Boy to the top of the charts, but makes a powerful enemy in Tupac Shakur. When Tupac joins forces with Death Row, the rivalry between Death Row and Bad Boy turns into an all-out war between East and West. This is episode 4 in our series Death Row and Bad Boy Records. Hit 'em up. It's 1995, 2 years after Biggie and Tupac's iconic performance in Madison Square Garden. Puffy is on stage at a club in Manhattan, wearing a black suit, white scarf, fedora. He's got a microphone in one hand and a bottle of champagne in the other. Bad Boy is holding court, literally. A king's throne sits next to Puffy on the stage. Gold trim, red velvet upholstery. The throne is for the new king of rap, Biggie Smalls. Biggie saunters onto the stage, his huge body cloaked in a loose-fitting tuxedo. He takes his seat in the throne, lounging back and chewing gum, like he's already gotten used to his new station in life. There's a joyful smile on his face. He has reason to smile, and so does Bad Boy. Biggie's debut went gold, then platinum. It hasn't outsold Death Row, but it's still a massive accomplishment. A shift of power back to the East after several years of domination by Death Row. Bad Boy is ascendant, just as Puffy predicted. Biggie's album leads the way for the rest of Bad Boy, and Puffy is right there by Biggie's side. He's a constant presence in the work of his artists, dancing in their videos and ad-libbing in the background on their tracks. On his way to the top, Biggie married Bad Boy R&B singer Faith Evans. Now she's about to put out her own hit record. Other Bad Boy hip-hop and R&B acts are poised for similar success. On stage, with Biggie seated in his throne, Puffy roars into the microphone. Tupac Shakur should be happy for his friend Biggie. After all, he helped groom him for this moment. But because of bloodshed a few months prior, Tupac now considers Biggie and Puffy his most bitter enemies. And Biggie's success only makes Tupac more determined to get revenge. The destruction of Tupac and Biggie's friendship goes back to November 30th, 1994, at Quad Studios, a recording studio in Times Square. Tupac is at a low point in his young life. He's got numerous court cases around the country, but the one that most troubles him is here in New York, where he's on trial for sexually assaulting a 19-year-old who visited him in his hotel room. He vehemently denies the allegations. Eventually, he will be found guilty of sexual abuse for groping the woman and acquitted of weapons and sodomy charges. But the bad press dries up his acting jobs, and his bank account dwindles. He's supporting his mother and much of his extended family. So now, Tupac's selling his services on the cheap. He walks into the Quad Studios lobby with three associates, ready to record a verse for a friend of Biggie's, in exchange for $7,000. Biggie is also in the studio that day. But before Tupac can hit the button for the elevator, he's confronted by three men who draw 9mm pistols.
Get down on the ground.
Instead of dropping to the floor, Tupac goes for the pistol he keeps concealed at his waist. He's shot as many as five times and drops to the floor, where he's pistol whipped. He plays dead as he's robbed of the rings on his fingers, the gold chains around his neck. When the assailants leave, Tupac drags himself to the elevator. And when the doors open on the next floor, he sees Biggie and Puffy staring at him. Biggie calls out to his friend.
Pop! Pop!
The next day happens to be the day Tupac is supposed to hear his verdict in the sexual assault trial. He checks himself out of the hospital, stunning doctors who are amazed he's still alive, and he rolls into court in a wheelchair. The jury finds him guilty of the sexual assault charge, but acquits him on other charges that could have carried a much stiffer penalty. A few months later, a judge hands down his sentence.
I'm sentencing you to 18 months minimum, pending appeal. Bail is set at $3 million. Court's adjourned.
Tupac doesn't have that kind of cash. He's sent to a maximum security prison in upstate New York. And while he's there, he can't get that image of Biggie standing over him out of his mind. It's too much of a coincidence that Biggie and Puffy were there to witness his humiliation. He's convinced it was a setup, particularly because Biggie releases the track Who Shot Ya just a few months after the shooting. Tupac has it playing on a loop in his mind.
Who shot ya? Separate the weak from the opps. Leap hard to creep them Brooklyn streets. It's on, nigga. Fuck all that bickering beef.
Tupac goes public with the accusations against Biggie and Puffy when a reporter interviews him in prison. Biggie is stunned that his friend Tupac would think he has anything to do with the shooting. But Tupac is hearing differently from his fellow inmates. Several approach him, whispering that Biggie had something to do with it. Now, Tupac has a long time in jail to stew about this betrayal and to think about his life and career. Before getting locked up, Tupac wasn't just famous as a gangster rapper, but as a poet of the black experience in the tradition of Langston Hughes. Tupac's song Dear Mama tells the story of his own childhood, where he grew up in extreme poverty with a mother addicted to crack cocaine. He wrote songs that both captured and transcended that reality.
And even as a crack fiend, mama, you always was a black queen, mama. I finally understand for a woman it ain't easy trying to raise a man.
But in prison, raging at the perceived betrayal from Biggie, Tupac decides he's done being an activist and done being a victim. He's ready to go to war. It's August 3rd, 1995, at Madison Square Garden. Biggie and Tupac rocked this stage together 2 years prior, and now the biggest names in rap from across the country are gathering here for the Source Awards. This is the biggest night in hip-hop, the Grammys and Oscars rolled into one. It's great to sell records to the masses, but that's nothing without respect from peers. And this is the night when rappers earn legitimacy. And Death Row is hungry for that prize. Within the East Coast hip-hop community, Death Row isn't considered royalty. They're still thought of as newcomers, maybe a flash in the pan. But Snoop's album is now one of the best-selling rap albums in history. Snoop and Dre have a feeling that this is the night the West Coast will finally be welcomed as equals to any rapper in New York. They sit with Suge near the stage, surrounded by row after row of hip-hop royalty. Suge has no interest in winning over the East with a smile. He rules by fear. Death Row wins the award for Motion Picture Soundtrack of the Year for their work on the film Above the Rim, and Suge takes the stage. He grabs the mic, his huge frame looming over the crowd. He's wearing his usual blood-red button-up shirt. First, Suge gives a shout-out to Tupac, who's still in jail. But after that, he's done sending love to the fans and other rappers. He's out for blood.
And one other thing I'd like to say, any artist out there want to be an artist and want to stay a star, don't want to have to worry about the executive producer trying to be all in the video, all on the record, dancing. Come to Death Row.
Suge's words are a direct shot at Puffy. And everyone in the room knows what Suge is doing by disrespecting Puffy on his home turf and publicly encouraging Puffy's artists to leave Bad Boy. He's saying to everyone in hip-hop, you're either with Death Row or you're against us. Join up with the West or get out of the way. There's a chance real blood might be shed. Death Row has armed Bloods and Crips from the West Coast in the building, and Bad Boy has come prepared as well. The anger builds throughout the night. The celebratory event turns into a turf war. Even Outkast, the Atlanta rappers who have nothing to do with this beef, get boos from both coasts when they accept their award. When Puffy takes the stage later in the evening, he tries to calm things down.
I'm the executive producer that a comment was made about a little bit earlier. But check this out. Contrary to what other people may feel, I would like to say that I'm very proud of Dr. Dre, of Death Row, and Suge Knight for their accomplishments. You know what I'm saying? I'm a positive black man, and I make music to bring us together, not to separate us. and all this East and West that needs to stop.
But it's too late. The anger in the room has too much weight, too much momentum. A month from now, a close friend of Suge's will be shot and killed at a party in Atlanta after arguing with Bad Boy's entourage. Both Suge and Puffy are in attendance, and Suge accuses Puffy of being involved in the murder. The case is never solved. The war is growing, and Suge wants Tupac by his side. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. It's October 1995, just 2 months after the blow-up at the awards ceremony. A white limo pulls up to the gates of Tupac's prison in upstate New York. Suge put together $1.4 million to secure Tupac his freedom, but the Death Row boss gets far more in exchange. Death Row now has Tupac under contract for his next three albums, and the bail money is just an advance on Tupac's future royalties. The limo drops Tupac at the airport, where there's a private jet ready to deliver him to the West Coast. Once he arrives, Tupac practically lives in Death Row's recording studio in the San Fernando Valley, a dimly lit room where there's no difference between night and day. He records verses as quickly as he can write them, alternatingly furious, paranoid, and anguished. He frequently references the prospect of his own death, as he does on the track he records during these sessions, Only God Can Judge Me. I'm having nightmares, homicidal fantasies. I wake up strangling, dangling my bed sheets. I call a nurse. Tupac completes a double album in just months. And when it's released at the beginning of 1996, All Eyes on Me is another dominant performance for Death Row. The album goes 5 times platinum as quickly as it hits the shelves. Now that business is out of the way, Tupac turns his mind to Biggie Smalls. With his album still at the top of the charts, Tupac records perhaps the most distilled piece of hatred ever put to verse. It's called Hit 'Em Up. Tupac releases it as a single. In it, he threatens Biggie, Puffy, and everyone associated with Bad Boy in the most personal terms possible. First off, fuck your bitch in the click you claim. Westside, when we ride, come equipped with game. You claim to be a player, but I fucked your wife. We bust on Bad Boys, niggas fuck for life. Plus, Puffy trying to see me weak, hearts I rip. Biggie Smalls and Junior Mafia, some mark-ass bitches. We keep on Tupac feels that he helped give Biggie his stardom. Now, he wants to take it away. Soon after Hit 'Em Up is released, Biggie is playing a sold-out show in St. Louis alongside several other rappers. Biggie's the headliner, but the organizers have asked him to go on early because they're worried about the fallout from his feud with Tupac. This is the kind of tension that will inspire Biggie's track, What's Beef?
Check this, what's beef? Beef is when you need two cats to go to sleep. Beef is when your moms ain't safe up in the streets. Beef is when I see you, guaranteed to be in ICU. One more time, what's beef?
Tupac is nowhere in sight, but his rivalry with Biggie has become so ugly that even casual fans feel compelled to choose sides. Tupac supporters chant lines from Hit 'Em Up while Biggie is on stage. When another part of the crowd chants back, Big E, Big E, the Tupac contingent responds, Tupac, Tupac, Tupac. Biggie has no idea how to deal with this. He's dealt with plenty of hardship in his life, plenty of danger, plenty of animosity, but never from a friend. Worse, Tupac's claims about his wife further erode Biggie's already faltering marriage to Bad Boys singer Faith Evans. And she's pregnant with his second child. It's March 29th, 1996, at the Shrine Auditorium in Los Angeles. It's the night of the Soul Train Awards ceremony, and both Biggie and Tupac are nominated for different awards. Biggie shows up in a white suit. Tupac comes in full army camo. The show itself goes off without incident, but afterwards, with Biggie and the Bad Boy entourage on the street outside the auditorium, Tupac and Suge come screaming out of nowhere in Death Row's latest piece of military hardware, a giant black Hummer. Tupac screaming at Biggie and trying to jump out of the window before the car can even come to a stop. On the street, Biggie realizes his crew is surrounded on all sides by Death Row affiliates. His security draws guns, but no shots are fired. It's the first time Biggie has seen Tupac face to face since that day when he was shot at Quad Studios. They lock eyes. Tupac's blazing with anger. Biggie's defiant. Biggie barely recognizes the man he once knew. But if it's a war Tupac wants, well, Biggie has a plan for how to end it. In the final episode of Death Row and Bad Boy, the war between the labels means that only one will remain standing. After the deaths of Tupac and Biggie, Puffy and Dr. Dre begin a rivalry for a new era. Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Business Wars. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or wherever you listen to podcasts. There's a link on the episode notes. You can tap or swipe over the cover art, and you'll see some offers from our sponsors. Please support our show by supporting them. If you like what you've heard, it would be great if you could give us a 5-star rating, and maybe even better if you could tell your friends how to subscribe. There's another way you can support us, and that's by answering a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Don't forget to tell us what business war stories you'd like to hear. A quick note about the conversations you've been hearing. We can't know exactly what was said, but this dialogue is based on our best research. Parts of this story were drawn from Ben Westhoff's original Gangstas, The Untold Story of Dr. Dre, Eazy-E, Ice Cube, Tupac Shakur, and the Birth of West Coast Rap. Also, Cheo Hodari Coker's book, Unbelievable, The Life, Death, and Afterlife, The Notorious B.I.G. I'm your host, David Brown. Michael Canyon Meyer wrote this episode. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Jenny Lauer Beckman is our editor and producer. Sound designed by Bay Area Sound. Our executive producer is Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Wondery. You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.